you know, young, dynamic, diverse, and for the teachers' union, a movement led by women. So Stacey and Olivia, take it away.
So good evening, everyone. Jesse forgets to tell people I'm a social studies teacher. So I'm a high school history teacher as well. So this is interesting for me from the perspective of what we can learn from it and how does this set us up for the next set of fights. What is it that we can take from this example? And how can we interrogate it? What are the questions that we have? So this is not going to just be Stacy having a discussion with Olivia. This is actually going to be us having a discussion. So after I exhaust all of my, like, nosy questions, I want to kind of open it up and get some more, you know, practice with you all in the room, especially if I've not, you know, hit your question in any real way. So kind of prepare yourself for that, actually, because, you know, how rare is it to get a woman who has went on a statewide teacher strike? It's pretty badass. So we're going to talk about that. So my first question, Olivia, I'm going to just jump right into it. Okay. Tell us about yourself, not like the headline. Tell us who Olivia is and how did you arrive in a classroom with hopes and dreams?
Okay. Let's see. So I think that, not to toot my own horn, but I think that everyone here can probably understand the drive within you to understand what's going on in the world and the desire to, I was laughing with my principal yesterday because we were talking about how some people have said some negative things about me being here in my school, and we laugh because I just can't stop. You know, I would love to be able to shut up and not talk about things, but I can't. And I've always been that way. I squelched a lot of movement that I had within me, and speaking about being a woman, you know, I think that that was taught to me to not believe in yourself or second guess everything that you have to say. So there were many times when I wanted to do more and I never did. And that actually was a big struggle throughout this entire time because I kept thinking, are we doing the right thing? You know, I would sit in these legislative sessions and the people would say, well, this isn't fiscally responsible. And I'd think, man, maybe it's not. I guess the money's not there. But then I would be reminded by my brothers and sisters in solidarity, no, this is the right thing. They would remind me. We would help each other move through those times. So anyway, I grew up in West Virginia, and it's a struggle to stay and a guilt trip to leave that you put on yourself because it's a beautiful, amazing, wonderful state, but it doesn't have a lot to offer you in you know, in money-wise and quality of life-wise. So I have traveled, but I continue to stay in West Virginia, and I went to Marshall, eventually moved to Charleston, which is the capital, only an hour away from Huntington. I always lived within an hour one way or another, and made my way into elementary school from subbing, and luckily I have an outside friend who outside I say from West Virginia. There aren't many people who live in West Virginia who are not from West Virginia. He's from Texas, but he loves West Virginia. Okay. And he's a huge union member and is very involved in the union, but loves rank and file work, and he's studied the Chicago strike. He is just a big scholar of the labor movements, and we would have these discussions about what was happening to West Virginia public education and that I didn't know about. Mm-hmm. And so I would go, he would speak at different hearings for things, and I would go to support him. And in supporting him, I learned all of the awful things that were going to be happening, and just as someone who loves West Virginia, who loves fighting for causes that are right, I and who can't shut up about things. I just started trying to inform people in my life of what was happening because I knew that they weren't taking the initiative. Not blaming them for that. They just...
But you don't shut down in an entire state just by having a one-on-one conversation.
Yeah.
So how do you move from the discussions that you're having with your activist, you know, labor intense friend to you guys are shutting down school in the entire state? Like, how does that happen? How do you get from northern West Virginia to southern West Virginia and all in between and just descend upon the Capitol?
You know, there were definitely stages within this entire process. And I want to come back to one thing. Let's see. We decided, so I was, Jay was the guy who is from Texas who got me involved in this. He also had a few friends from around the state who he got involved. And we became this kind of small core outside of union leadership group.
Okay.
And within that group, we discussed how are we going to inform people? What is it that the questions that you had? Mm-hmm. And it was, we need to make sure that people are calling the Capitol.
Okay.
We need to have discussions with in the teachers' lounge.
Mm-hmm.
And my question, because I was worried that I wasn't allowed to have conversations about not even using the S word, strike, mm-hmm. not even using the S word in class. I mean, in school, right. But talking about the things that the legislature mm-hmm. was doing, mm-hmm. I was afraid to talk about that at school because
why?
I thought...
Tell me why.
I thought that it was illegal.
Okay.
Because I didn't know. And I thought that the principal was going to get mad at me or I thought that somebody might turn us in for talking about things that affected us
mm-hmm.
on school property, on public property that the taxpayers pay for.
Okay.
And then my my core group of friends were like, they gave me examples of mm-hmm. how they were doing it. And they were having it in the teacher's lounge, but as math intervention, my schedule is different than everybody else's, so I couldn't. So I went to my principal. Luckily, I think that I might be unique in having a wonderful, supportive principal.
Okay.
And so I went to her and said, listen, do you know what's happening? And informed her of things. And she said, it's okay. Let's talk about it mm-hmm. at our Touch Base Tuesday.
Okay.
And so...
And Touch Base Tuesday is...
Touch Base Tuesday is the 30-minute meeting we have every week with the staff.
Okay.
To touch base on the things that are happening that week. And I was nervous because... unions are political, or at least in West Virginia.
So when you say political, political is a big word.
Right.
So what type of imagery or fear even does that like?
We have a strong union history, but the people who have the political officials, the politicians who have supported unions in the past have been Democrats.
Okay.
In the 1990 strike, Daryl McGraw was a Democrat. He was the attorney general, and he was very for unions.
Mm-hmm.
Distant family, and I found out today when talking to my dad that there were other senators. At the time, the attorney general's brother, one of them, he was the Speaker of the House mm-hmm. or the Senate. And
so it's not
he
just
was
in Illinois that everyone's kind of related, guys.
Right. And
yeah, so it's kind of everywhere.
Oh, definitely.
Gotcha.
You know, it's
okay.
all relative. All right. And so he was a Democrat and he was very for unions. And so there were, you know, people would say, well, we're going to file an injunction, but he wouldn't go for it. He wasn't going to allow the injunctions to be. So it's just Democrats or union. If you're union, you're Democrat. If you're Republican, you're not because of right to work. We had that pass a few years ago also that was led by the Republicans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so since we went Trump, you know, and religion is also kind of synonymous with Republicans, mm-hmm. at least in West Virginia. And
in most places.
And we are still in the Bible Belt.
For
so
sure.
A lot of people who I work with are very religious.
Right.
And because religion is tied to politics, and politics is, you know, Republican politics, mm-hmm. and there aren't a whole lot of Democrats that I knew of, and you don't talk about politics, so I didn't want to ask anybody. It was just this whole big conflict that I had within myself. How are they going to relate to me? Are they going to look at me like I am some bad person who's trying to preach to them about politics? Mm-hmm. Are they going to agree with me or understand? And so I have to work with these people, and it was a little bit of pride.
It was uncomfortable.
It was.
So how did the Tuesday meeting provide that space to have the conversation?
So I stood up, and we were a small school, two classes per grade, mm-hmm. so 12 classes. And we had service personnel there, also aides and a couple of other people, and I was shaking. I mean, I am an actor. I will talk in front of hundreds and hundreds of people, mm-hmm. but I was shaking in front of these 25 people and having a hard time speaking because I was nervous. But as I stood there talking about insurance and talking about the taxes that have been cut and the jobs that have decreased and how the 1% raise that the governor had promised us in his State of State address was just going to completely eat all of the insurance, mm-hmm. was going to eat the 1% raise that we were getting. As I was telling them these things, I saw the people who I was most terrified of, mm-hmm. shaking their heads. And I was, that helped me not a whole lot because I was still really nervous.
Right.
Because it was new to me too. I'm not an expert on it. But that helped me kind of move forward, and it helped open up the conversations that they were having in the teacher's lounge at lunch breaks.
Because they were already aware that they were going to be losing.
They weren't until I talked to them.
So no one had informed them?
No. No one.
So talk to me about how you go from being up in front of your staff, 25 people talking about this, to a 20,000 person Facebook group.
So we were really struggling, my friends and I, in this small cluster of group, because we only had maybe 1,000 members in the group.
Okay.
And it was, we were discussing, why aren't more people upset about this? Why aren't more people talking about this? Do they not know? Do they not care? Do they not know how? Are they feeling like they're being preached at?
Right.
What's going on? How can we get them involved? And someone said, when are we going to go on strike? And I'm not kidding you, 24 hours later, we were up to 16,000 members.
Interesting.
And then, you know, a week later, we were at 20,000.
The S word is what catalyzed
it did.
The response from the people.
Yeah.
Okay. So then how do you take 20,000 people in a Facebook chat and then begin to organize across the state? Because when I saw all of you in red in the state capitol, mm-hmm. I was like, somebody has really pissed everyone off. Because, like, we ain't all going to agree on one thing in here, right? So how do you fill a state capitol in a state with regional differences, mm-hmm. to your point, partisan differences, religious issues, mm-hmm. with the word strike? Like, how do you do that? So who's your boogeyman in West Virginia? Like, who was the guy hanging an effigy? Because it's a guy.
At first, it was the PEIA board.
Okay.
It was Public Employees Insurance Agency. At first, it was them.
Okay.
How many people,
yeah.
on the board? Six.
Are they elected or appointed?
They are appointed by the governor, and it used to be that they had one teacher and representative,
uh-huh.
and one service personnel representative. And then last year, 2 years ago, I'm sorry.
After Right to Work.
It was cut.
Yep.
They were cut.
Okay.
So then it was just these people appointed who were on the PEIA board.
And could you tell me a little bit about their makeup? Like, what do they do? Were they once public employees, or were they Fortune 500 managers?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think that they were, most of them were are insurance.
Okay.
Just strictly in the trade of insurance. But I can't be quoted on that. I haven't done my research. But it quickly turned, the reason I don't know it is because it quickly turned to, it's not the PEI and the insurance board, it's the government.
Okay.
It is the legislature, because they haven't given us, they haven't given the board any money to work with. Mm-hmm. Health insurance costs are rising.
So you've identified, we don't have enough revenue.
Yes.
Okay. Keep talking.
Yeah. So insurance costs are rising. We found out that it would be $50 million or $60 million in addition to what we were already making for this year. And then with 6% inflation every year after that.
She's a math teacher.
That they would have to give us to be able to keep the benefits that we have.
Okay.
So the way that PEIA, because the legislature said, well, this is the money that we're giving you, we are, and the term is fixed PEIA or fully fund PEIA, mm-hmm. the Republicans, and I hate it that it's down the line, but it was strictly straight down the line, Democrats voting and Republicans voting, but they were saying, we have fully funded PEIA. We've given them the money. They just need to figure out what to do with it. It's mm-hmm. them. So it was a lot of, you know, back and forth blaming one another. But people were smarter than that. People saw through that. Mm-hmm. So then once we found that out as a core group, we really pushed that to the members at large. So that way they, before the politicians started blaming it on the PEIA board, everybody knew that it was the revenue issue.
Okay, so let me also do something quickly. So you guys are an insurgent group of teachers, basically.
Yes, and
public employees.
Yeah, public employees, yeah.
But teachers is the sexier, more sympathetic face, right?
Right.
Right. Right. So you guys are an insurgent group of folks.
Uh-huh.
Where's union leadership? And no one's like this.
They were there. Mm-hmm. They were there. And after talking to delegate members of AFT and delegate members of WVEA, which is the West Virginia subset or
NEA.
Chapter of NEA, mm-hmm. They have been fighting this fight for several years.
Mm-hmm. How were they fighting it?
They were fighting it by going to the Capitol, having a lobbying day, saying this is what teachers deserve. We are speaking for the teachers, but it wasn't doing. I'm sure that it did something, but the issue was, and the issue it's gotten better because of the strike and because of the backlash that they got. Mm-hmm. It wasn't shared widely or effectively enough. Mm-hmm. It might have been communicated, but it wasn't effective. So that way everybody knew this is what the unions are doing. This is what we have done. These are the specific fights that we have fought. These are the ways that we have fought them. And
these are the ways that you can engage.
Yes. Yeah. And so I know that some people, members, rank and file members, went to the union leaders of not only their local maybe it was their local chapters, mm-hmm. and then the local chapter leaders went to the state leaders, but they didn't believe that teachers were ready. They didn't believe that a strike was going to happen.
So what made them believe?
Oh, they had to. It was happening in front of their eyes. So they had to say, okay, let's do this.
So then, because I can imagine this tension, right? So you laid out that they're doing their annual lobby day. They're having these conversations, mm-hmm. and things are still moving at snail's pace. They're in this circle from the board to the legislature to the board, you know, hamster on a wheel, basically.
Yeah.
And then Facebook.
And then Facebook, yeah.
Right? Well, it's not Facebook, but Facebook.
That was the platform at which it
right.
happened, yeah.
And so, and then do you guys just start showing up in Charleston? Like, how does anyone get a clue
okay.
that this exists, right? Do you send out a press release? Is it a hustle, a mass tweet? What's going on here?
So I like to describe West Virginia as, you know, you have your mountain mama. We call her our mountain mama from the John Denver song, and she cradles us, right? She gives us life, she gives us love, she gives us everything. And each section of the state, because there aren't very many, have their own characters, that have their okay. own, they're a child of the family. Mm-hmm. And Southern West Virginia is that wild, rebellious child that will do anything, say anything, doesn't think before they speak, mm-hmm. and are going to be damned if anybody stops them from doing what they want to do.
Okay.
So their role, because they have, out of anybody in the state, they have been beaten, battered, abused, and the only word to describe it, we have tried to find another word, but they have been raped
wow.
of everything.
Now that's pretty provocative. Can you explain like what goes into like making a decision to use that particular word to describe the context of their lives there?
So, Cole.
Okay.
Is the ground that we live on and that they live on. And it's the only thing when we were settled, when West Virginia was settled, it was basically settled and they saw, oh, coal, let's extract it. Let's do something with it. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't an ability to establish any kind of economy as we know mm-hmm. it today.
A single-sourced economy.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so they decided, okay, let's start extracting this. And then eventually, which it was working for them fine,
for sure.
because it was the local people pulling it out to power their homes and power their businesses. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, they saw here's an ability to make money. A larger company came in, and it turned into, and I don't know the history well enough, but I know that out-of-state corporations, and I don't know if it was out-of-state coming in or people in-state leaving mm-hmm. and then keeping the business going in West Virginia, but they gave the workers, eventually, after the union wars, mm-hmm. they gave them money mm-hmm. for their land and money for the coal, but at first, they didn't, and they were just, they took everything and didn't put it back into.
So robbed the land of his resources.
Yeah. And they're about to do the same thing with gas. And with the coal, okay, so yes, they're giving money to the landowners. Yes, they're giving money to the workers, which they should have done. They should have given money to the landowners and to the workers who worked freaking hard for their companies.
But they paid no taxes.
They pay no taxes
okay.
to the state of West Virginia. And so now they have left, and we don't have anything to keep our economy alive. Mm-hmm. The rest of the state has not benefited from that money, and not only the rest of the state, but the areas of southern West Virginia are hit hard by the opioid crisis. Mm-hmm. I have had discussions, and you can even look it up online. I don't know where, but there is a yelling, screaming fight at one of the senators of this group of people from Mingo or Logan County, one of the southern counties, that said, they don't have. I forget.
Supports.
It's gonna come to me here in a little bit.
But what you're saying is that you have a population in southern West Virginia. Unemployment is high. The economy is basically non-existent, and drug use is rampant. So if you have mothers and fathers on drugs, what's going on with the students in the classroom?
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Are there social workers and counselors, drug treatment centers? Are there any? Is there anything there that's supportive to the families there, or even services? Is the state funding services?
There are services for them. It's difficult to bring anybody to Southern West Virginia, though. There's not a whole lot there unless you're willing to put yourself through hard work. Exhausting work that just kind of drains you because it seems like an uphill battle with mud and rain. Mm-hmm. But there was this wonderful program created called Reconnecting McDowell. Mm-hmm. And McDowell is a county in Southern West Virginia, and it was a private and public collaboration to give money back to the public education system in McDowell and revitalize the county through education. Mm-hmm. And I know that AFT does have a lot of work and effort put into that, and it has made a big difference, and kids do see a future outside of McDowell County. High schoolers are able to have distant learning opportunities. Mm-hmm. There are efforts being put into, and the people who live there are wonderful, intelligent people who just want respect and haven't gotten respect. Mm-hmm. And so that's why they are rightfully so first on the line.
Right.
First to call people out and say, you know what, we demand respect, we deserve respect, and you're going to give it to
so
us.
So how do they drag the rest of you guys with, though?
I don't think they dragged us with them. Okay. I think that they inspired us and made us feel comfortable.
Okay.
It was like, oh man, we're itching to do this. We want to do this. We want to do this. But we have so much fear and we have a lot of apprehension. And how are we going to do it? And are we going to have all of the support? The same questions you all are asking. How are we going to get the people from the Eastern Panhandle who mm-hmm. who have talked about seceding from us and, you know, becoming part of Virginia because they have better working conditions and higher taxes and higher property taxes, so that way they can get better public education systems and who commute to Washington, D.C. How are we going to get them a part of this fight? And Southern West Virginia said, we don't care if y'all join us. We're going to do it anyway because it's what we want and it's what we deserve.
Right.
And so it was an inspiration to us to say, all right, I guess we can do it.
Okay.
And I guess it doesn't matter if we have everybody with us.
So is it a bus or is it a carpool? Is it a march? How do you get there?
Bus.
So were there a series? See, here's what I'm relating it back to, like, because Chicago, right? I'm relating it back to our struggle here. I remember, like, a series of small things that we did. Rallies, demonstrations, and then boom, right?
Yeah.
Did it take all of that?
Okay, so the Southern Counties called it Fed Up Friday.
Okay.
And they demanded the union leaders in the counties to take a vote on whether or not to go. Of course, they had almost unanimous vote to go out.
Okay.
But they, I guess, wanted to do it officially, and they, you know, are paying union dues, so they want the unions to do the work. And then they all went in buses to the Capitol. Hundreds of people. I was lucky enough to be able to go, and I just was crying the whole time, like, oh my gosh, these people are so amazing, and they're chanting, and they all had these red shirts that every single one of them were the exact same. They had their counties on the back.
Okay.
And so that's what they did. And then everybody else said, all right, we're ready to go Monday. Let's all go Monday. And the union said, no, we can't go Monday. You don't understand what a strike entails. You don't understand what's going to happen. So they said, you need public support. We need public support. We need to say that we have done absolutely everything before we go on strike, because that's our last card. That's the last card we have. We can't.
And what did you guys say?
We said, okay, fine. We'll do what you want. But that pent up so much energy, and there was so much anger for that, for those 3 days. And then the unions, they listened to the teachers. We called and called and called and called. So that was our first step.
So calling, who are you calling?
Senators and delegates.
Okay, so the first task was to like organize a call-in.
Yes. And emails.
Yeah, okay.
Same thing. And on the Facebook group, people were sharing their emails. People were sharing the scripts that they had when they called. Mm-hmm. So that way it gave a lot of people who didn't have confidence in that kind of thing to be able to do that same thing. And people were also sharing the responses that they got mm-hmm. from the senators and the delegates. They would screenshot it and post it. And a lot of them were not good, which fueled people even more.
So they were insulting.
They were insulting.
Okay.
Or I don't want to name names, but many.
Please,
but
we like it.
Well, there were a couple of responses that were incredibly grammatically incorrect, had no punctuation.
To a teacher?
Oh yes.
That's awesome.
And there were some that literally made no sense. People would be like, what does this mean? And I mean, we would just like scour through and people would put question marks and try and figure it
so
out. But
red
we couldn't decipher.
Ink pens everywhere.
Yeah, we yeah. couldn't decipher what okay. they meant. So okay. it was, it just fueled the fire. And so what we did all of that, and what the union leaders did say is they said, we're listening to you, we will cast a vote, but oh, okay, so all of that was happening up until, so when the three marched out on Fed Up Friday, the rest of us did what's called a walk-in,
okay.
which I think that you all
we've
are familiar
right,
with.
Right.
And so that was the rest of our way. And not all counties did that.
Okay.
Because there were still some counties who had no idea what was going on.
Interesting.
So it was a good step. And looking back on it, a lot of the things that we as, you know, rank and file members or, you know, just people who weren't a part of the union, public employees, everyone. And that was the true beauty of this is that even the union leaders, they didn't care if you were union. Maybe they did care if you were union or not,
they
but they didn't say it. You know, they didn't. They let everybody vote. They let everybody speak. They let everybody come to the meetings. Mm-hmm. So they didn't question that. They were true leaders in the fact that they said, okay, we're going to do this for all. But anyway, that's a separate issue. So for the week leading up to the Fed Up Friday, oh, everything looking back at what people were angry at the unions for, they were probably, you know, it's like a mom where you fight your mom and looking back, you're like, all right, mom, you probably had a point there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things was we wouldn't have been 55 strong had we not taken that first week
okay.
to do the walk-ins. So each
so you built capacity.
We did build capacity, mm-hmm. but the people who did the walk-ins on Friday did not want to do any more walk-ins. They did not want to do any more honking waves. They did not want to write any more emails or call any more people because they had done that over and over
right.
and over again. There were some people who, after school, and even in one case, the principal let some of the teachers leave school early, sent their kids off into other rooms.
Right.
And let them go to the Capitol and sit in on education and finance committees.
Okay.
That were happening before school was out.
Okay.
So that was a step that many people took if they could. And then, so we had all of the votes, and then the next Thursday and Friday, people had caught up.
Okay.
Superintendents were somewhat shamed into... Not shamed, but when all of your teachers are going to be out, and three superintendents of the state have already closed schools for this fight, are handing out coffee and donuts, and you know, on the picket line with these.
So the
staff.
Boss is out there too.
Yes.
So they discovered their public employees as well.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Okay.
And so. Those three superintendents set the stage. Well, one of them didn't. He actually, I don't know, he called schools off, but then he canceled schools and said because of an illegal work stoppage, whereas the other two...
Well, that was his job, right?
Right. It was, But he got so much flack for it. I mean, the teachers just bashed him. People were bashing him everywhere. How could you do this? What are you thinking? There are these other two superintendents who have closed down schools in such a positive way in support of their teachers. And you're in southern West Virginia and in the union towns and you're saying it's an illegal work stoppage. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the rest of the superintendents were kind of treading lightly.
Right.
And wanted to stay within the bounds of their job and the legality of it, but they also wanted to and kind of had to support the movement.
So I remember in our like lead up to this, one of the things that I still remember the night before we go out, Karen gets this letter from every city elected official, Black Caucus, Latino Caucus members, and they're saying, you know, black kids can't be out of school, brown kids can't be out of school, this is terrible, you should stop it, don't do it, right? Mm-hmm. Every single camera in the city was focused in. Talk to me about the headlines in the newspapers there, the TV cameras, and the local media. What was that? Was it positive? Was it skeptical? Was it abusive?
It was very neutral, except for one paper in Wheeling that was very anti-teachers leaving the classroom. Mm-hmm. And there was an editorial in the newspaper that was just, you know, same kind of things. Kids need to be in the classroom. Teachers are doing something illegal. And they should be happy with the 1% that the governor has promised them. Mm-hmm. And everybody's health care is rising. So why are they special?
And their editorial board also endorsed Trump, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, they were slow to catch on. They didn't really report it. They would report it occasionally, but it was always with the view, because teacher is a sexier term, teachers want a raise. But it wasn't about the teachers. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about the raise. It was about the public employees and their insurance.
Right.
And the strikers and the public employees were so angry about it, but it hurt the teachers, because the public employees were only paying attention to, well, not all public employees, but a lot of public employees were only paying attention to the news. And they were saying, the teachers aren't, why aren't the teachers talking about us? Why is it, you know, the teachers aren't supporting us. They're doing this for their own good. So they were, some public employees who were on the Facebook group with us were bashing us for not supporting them, where it was like, no. My blue shirt is because of the public employees.
Right.
We have a red shirt for the teachers. We have blue. So we established days. That was one of the earlier steps.
Okay.
Was red for Ed on Mondays. No, Wednesdays. Sorry. Red for Ed on Wednesdays. Blue Mondays for public employees. And then red and blue, because we're teachers, put together as purple. So as a unified group, we wore purple shirts on Fridays. So Monday was public employees, Wednesday was red for Ed, and then Friday was for solidarity. And somehow that escaped a lot of the public employees, and so it was personally hurting for a lot of us teachers who were like, no, we're out here fighting for you too. Stop lying, news. So I actually was interviewed by a guy who's kind of since become my a good acquaintance, but he was interviewing me for a TV station, for a local TV station, and he kept asking me about the raise. Well, what do you think about the raise? Don't you have student loans that you have to pay? Mm-hmm. And finally I said, listen, I'm not going to interview with you anymore. If you are going to make this piece about teachers and the raise, then we're done. We're done here. Mm-hmm. And he said, all right. We'll talk about public employee health care. Let's go ahead and talk about it. And luckily, I think in the interview, I let him know, I gave him a lot of good points as to why we're in this fight. And so he did throw something in there about the public employee health care. Right.
Yeah, for sure. So talk to me, though, about, so you guys, there's obviously tensions between public employees and the teachers, because to the point that the media may, teachers are a more sympathetic face. You have children attached to them, entire communities that need them, right? But the issue is actually all public employees are under attack at the same time. So you figure out how to deal with some of those tensions. What were some of the other tensions that were happening? We've talked about the rank and file activists and, you know, the union leadership. We've mm-hmm. talked about teachers and public employees. Are there any other tensions that we've missed? And then how did you resolve them?
So one of the things was that we were really struggling with was, what is our position?
Okay.
Because it started as public employee health care.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to fund PEIA, fully fund PEIA, not for this year, but for all future years. So we wanted a consistent revenue source
okay.
in the books for how we're going to fund our health care.
Okay.
But then, because it's an election year,
mm-hmm.
because this was starting to become something more than just what this was, because we were seeing how corrupt the government was,
mm-hmm.
we said, okay, how are we going to, what is our fight? And that was such a big struggle, because there were different people from different counties saying, this is what our goal is. This is what our proposal is.
Mm.
My core group of friends, we created a proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was no proposal from union leadership until further on, maybe about a week
mm-hmm.
before negotiations happened.
Okay.
And from a big thing that happened was WVEA and AFT joined forces, and WVSSPA, which is West Virginia School Service Personnel Association. They all joined forces, which was this huge deal, amazing, fantastic, because they've always been at odds and always, you know, kind of tried to, you know, they're two entities who want the same people. So they put out a statement. We want 5%. We want a consistent revenue source for PEIA. We want all of the bills attacking public education off the table. And we want the paycheck protection bill, which is to keep union dues from coming out every
right.
single year. You have to re-sign up
right.
to have your union dues
right.
taken out of your paycheck every year. And that was off the table. Those were the things that we wanted. But that wasn't defined until later. And people were...
How much later?
Not until a week before negotiations. And
okay.
it just... And they tried to get it out through a couple of flyers, but they kept saying, it's our strategy. We can't tell you all because it's our strategy. If it gets out...
What does that feel like when you're occupying this
So
space?
Infuriating. Because we wanted to know what we were fighting for. It was like, okay, what are we fighting for?
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard to get... You know, those of us who wanted this, who realized the effect that we could have... We're struggling with the our coworkers who didn't understand,
mm-hmm.
who didn't want to be striking, who didn't want to be fighting, who weren't going to do the work stoppages. They, how could we get them on board if they didn't know what they were risking? And what, you know, we didn't know if the superintendents were going to call off schools and if we were going to have a work stoppage. So they thought, well, I don't have money to pay my loans. I don't have money to pay for my kids to eat. I don't have money to pay for my rent or my mortgage. I don't know what I'll be losing in this and what I'll be gaining by the losses. So it was just, it was infuriating because we just wanted that from them and they were not giving it to us. So we tried as my friend group and we disagreed, which is why we, and it was this struggle of, okay, well, we want to be leaders in this, but we also respect the unions and understand that they are the leaders. They are the ones going to the negotiating table. So how are we going to balance this?
So did anyone from the rank and file space make it to the negotiating table? Or how close?
No, they didn't. And no, they didn't. Right. Yeah, no, because the issue that happened, I know some of you probably know, but the Tuesday when
mm-hmm.
the three presidents
they said it was
got,
over, and you said,
No. See you Thursday. Get off the stage. And so had, you know, one of us been on in that negotiation, then that would have had a different outcome for sure.
So then let's stay there for a moment.
Uh-huh.
So demands are happening as, so we're flying the plane as we're building the plane.
Mm-hmm.
We're risking everything,
right,
but not very clear on, yeah, what we're about to get.
Yeah.
You have a leadership that isn't necessarily plugged into everyone that's inside of the Capitol.
Yeah, right.
There are competing negotiating stances, mm-hmm, and desires from this group and this group, this region and that region. They go into a room, they come out and say, we won. And you said, no, we didn't. And you said, and they said, let's go back to work. And you said, no, we're not. Okay, so then what happens? Like, at that moment when you tell them no, what happens?
oh, man. We were all kind of, I don't want to say all, but because there were some people who were adamant about what they were going to do. They weren't going to back down. No, mm-hmm, we're not going to leave. But there were also people who had that question. Well, geez, there's so much more to this than us just going and yelling. We have to figure out our what's going to happen. So then all that night throughout the Facebook group, people were asking, because there were hundreds of people there, but there weren't the mass thousands of people there because it was a Tuesday night.
Okay.
And
so the mass we see is, what day of the week is that?
It varied.
Okay.
The Thursday and Friday, thousands of people.
Okay.
Monday, not so much. Tuesday, I think even less. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, very few.
Okay.
Like, not a lot at all. Mm-hmm. A few hundred. And then Saturday, gosh, I don't know. It seems like a whole year went by in those 9 days. But Saturday was a small crowd, but that was the most, that was the day that everything happened, was
okay,
that Saturday.
So tell us more.
That was the day when they finally had the Senate Finance Committee, right, finally decided to talk.
Because up until this time, like, we're watching it from afar, and they're telling us that, you know, the money isn't there, we can offer you this much,
right,
you guys say no, and then, you know, everyone goes back into a room.
Yeah, so there were so many different stances or changes about how much money they were going to give us.
Okay.
At first, it was 1%. Then it was 1% over 5 years. Then it was 2%, 1%, 1%, 1%. Then it was 2%, 1%, 1%. They were hoping to get that by without anybody noticing somehow.
No math teachers.
No. And then the six, and then Governor Justice, who had been completely MIA the whole time, decided to go on town hall tours. And a young boy, Gideon, sixth grade,
mm-hmm,
stood up and asked him the question, why are you putting gas companies above us? Why are you fighting so hard against giving teachers and public employees what they need? And then he gave him this spiel about how, well, if you charge too many taxes, then the businesses won't come here, and then we won't be able to have a good economy.
Mm-hmm.
And the boy said, well, why aren't you investing in the kids? Because we can grow up and we can make a good economy too if we're educated.
Mm-hmm.
And there were cameras. And he went home. Governor Justice went home. And the next day, he went to the negotiating table with the union leaders.
Okay.
And that's the night. So that was the Tuesday night,
mm-hmm,
that the union leaders came out and said, I think, and I do not blame them for doing it this way. I think that they had purely good intentions,
mm-hmm,
with what they were doing. I think that they were amazed at what the governor did, because he came in and he said, I'll give you everything.
So after that's being on your checklist. Absent, he says hi, and they swoon.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And they were just kind of like, oh, okay, well, we got it. Yeah, sure. This is a great step in the right direction, guys. Let's go back to school on Thursday. We are on the task force. It will be good. It's a great step in the right direction. And people were like, "What? Are you kidding me? No, we're not going back. How dare you do that and speak for us? Because that's not the case at all." And so then we stayed. We fought. The bill was eventually amended because they had passed the 2-1-1. And so the bill was amended and sent to the House. The House, all but one person voted yes to the bill. So Republican, Democrat, everyone voted yes to the 5%.
What day is this again? Like in the number?
This was, I want to say, 1, 2, 3, 4. Day 5.
Now, are parents calling them? Are parents emailing them?
That was one of the steps, was we have done everything that we can. This was not yet, though. Not okay. yet. So okay. It had gone to the House. The House had said yes, and it was being sent to the Senate. The Senate tabled it. They would not see to it because they did not believe the governor was telling the truth. Not that he was lying, but that he was like our president and just spewing things out because he wanted it to happen.
Okay.
So they said, the revenue's not there. We don't have the money. What money is he talking about? He said that we only had 1%. You all should be happy with 1%. Last year, the union said they'd be happy with a 2% raise mm-hmm. when the money wasn't there. Why are you... I forget what the whole argument was, but why are you asking for more when... And so, or why aren't you happy? And they just delayed and delayed and delayed and tabled the bill and wouldn't talk about it.
Because at the same time, the session is almost over too, right?
Yes. Right? We had 10 days left, I think, or something.
So you're racing against the end of session.
Mm-hmm.
Kids have been out of school for a number of days, and the tactic is, or the strategy is, to stall.
Yeah, and to get the public against the teachers. We are going to anger the public because the teachers are being selfish and not going back to school, so they were just delaying until they had their finance people look over and find out if the money was there. Well, it turns out, which we all knew, and this proves us right in the end in not going back, because if imagine had we actually gone back on Thursday, we would not have gotten any of this. But they said that they were waiting on a fiscal note from the governor's office. Well, the fiscal note was there from the House, from the governor and the House the mm-hmm. whole time. I guess they also said that they were trying to find out, because they wanted it to go to the Senate Finance Committee. The Finance Committee had to approve it, and then it had to go to the Senate, and then they had to approve it. The Finance Committee said, well, we can't talk about this. They put it 15th on their agenda. Out of 15 items, they put it very last. And they kept saying, well, it's just not right for us to delay, you know, put everything on hold for these educators. It's just not right for us to stop the way that politics work. And it's like, come on, you have thousands of people outside. You don't see the urgency in this. You have kids waiting. So turns out it all unfolded because the Senate voted down the bill. They said no. And so because at that point they had said no, they amended the bill to say 4% for teachers. It went back to the House. The House voted no against that 4% bill. So then they had to create a special, smaller
conference committee.
Mm-hmm. And then that conference committee stalled and stalled and stalled. And they apparently, it came out in this, they hadn't asked for the information that they were trying to find from the state superintendent's office about the amount of money that people made. Or they wanted something from the West Virginia Department of Education that they hadn't even asked for, that they said they were waiting on, but they hadn't even asked for it. And once they did ask for it, they got it within 30 minutes of asking for it. And they said that they were waiting the whole time to find out this information.
So you're dealing with incompetence. You're dealing with
just flat out lies. Flat out lies.
Okay, just flat out lies. Yep. So we get through it, because obviously you're here. So we get through it. When they came back a second time with, this is the deal, what's the deliberation? What's the mood of the rank and file? How do they accept it, and how do they put it forth? Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess resilience. Like, fatigue is setting in. People are trying to dig deep and figure out, because they need to get paid. Yeah. Parents are at their wits' end. Right? So talk to me about, like, they come out, this is what we have, what are the leaders met with, do the rank and file respond?
Happy in the fact that we won this battle. Mm-hmm. But still a little bit sad, I think.
Why?
Because we wanted more, and more in that it still doesn't take us out of 48 paid. And one of the big fights for us was getting teachers here and to West Virginia, keeping teachers in West Virginia.
So retaining your teachers, being able to recruit
new teachers. We have 700 vacancies, teacher vacancies. So we had nothing to lose. We had nothing to lose. Our health, we were going to be losing money by staying in our jobs the way that it was. And people, I was sitting at a table of my friends, all amazing, wonderful, strong women and teachers who any student would be lucky to have, mm-hmm. A part of their lives, all said, I can't stay. I can't stay a teacher. And then we just started talking about the things that we would do, mm-hmm. how we would make a living somewhere else, either in a different field or a different state, because we don't have a lot of other options in West Virginia, which is the big issue, is how are we going to diversify our economy? Stop putting it all into one pot and not charging them the taxes that they owe us.
So how do you keep this then? How do you sustain what was so, like, polarizing in your state? How do you sustain that? Because now it's not about health insurance anymore. You have your health insurance. What is it about next? How do you maintain this coalition of the willing?
That is a discussion that we're having right now. And we are actually looking towards you all as the example of what to do next. And I got on the Facebook page today. I've kind of been trying to stay away from it just to be able to relax a little bit, because I know that there's more to do. And so I need to kind of get out of that realm and kind of refocus and retrain my brain to think outside of the box or creatively. And I looked at it today, and apparently there's been a lot of division already, even within the last 3 days since we came back.
Where are the roots of?
I think it's going to the things that we ignored before. Before, we had education as something to bring us together. We had healthcare as something to bring us together. And now there isn't one goal. And I think that people are feeling kind of, when I said sad, maybe not sad, but a little unfulfilled, because it wasn't always just about these things. Or it started off as healthcare, then became raise and these other things. But as we were doing all of the work and all of the studying and researching, we found out the true core issue was, which is, we want our state back. And So Ojeda is a senator who's running for Congress, and he has really been an ally and a leader in this whole thing. And he's really been trying to increase the severance tax on gas. People aren't aware that the gas that's taken out of the ground, only the natural gas is being taxed, but there are other gases and chemicals in that's being extracted that's not being that's not, they don't have to pay for that, but they're right. selling it. So we are trying to decide, okay, are we going to stay focused on education and move forward through that way, or are we going to refocus and go more towards focusing it on getting out-of-state corporations, getting the money from them that we deserve. But I think that when it comes to unionizing in education, it's going to be just keeping people in a long, sustained fight and keeping them knowing that it's not going to happen all of the time.
So how do you do that? Like, what's the brainstorm on that? Because that's a real thing. 2013, they closed down 50 schools, right? And I remember looking at the photographs of the signs.
Oh,
teachers,
yeah.
And teachers make the best signs. And I remember the signs of the schools and how you would see the signs of people who the schools were named after. Uh-huh. You see all these signs of Black people in the schools were named after, and every last one of them closed. This year, you're going to shut down all of the schools in Inglewood. And perhaps NTA is the most insidious, right? Because they did everything that they were supposed to do. And you keep moving the goalposts there. So how do you sustain that trauma and then still want to continue to fight? How do you keep taking a punch and still organize because the work still needs to be done? Like, what is the thought process with you all right now?
I don't know if I have the answer to that question, to be mm-hmm. honest. I wish I did. I think that we are going to try and... Oh, okay, I will say this. We have, my friends and I did try and find people who aren't necessarily... union, like, they don't hold a leadership position mm-hmm. in the unions, but who might want to stay more informed. So trying to broaden that base of people who are involved, you all, and I would love to take back and share with my union friends so that way they can share with their union leaders some of the things that you all have done. PPCs?
PPC.
Yeah, we don't have anything like that.
PPC and PPLCs.
I think that that's really key. I think that that would be something that would be a great step and the next step in our process and keeping people energized and paying attention and researching. So I think that even just doing that would be a great next step.
So I want to open this up and I want to do something real quick.
Okay.
One thing that we didn't read about in the headline uh-huh. that makes you the most proud of that of the resistance that you guys created in the state?
There were moments where I felt incredibly fatigued. And I even mentioned it earlier where I was questioning and doubting the entire thing and thinking, well, we should just take the 4%. If that means that state employees get 4%, you know, that's great. Are we going to sink to their level and be petty and fight over 1%? Mm-hmm. But it really was unity in that every single person, leadership, non-leadership, rank and file members, or kids, the students, the parents, brought to the table something. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away by the creativity, the support, and encouragement that everybody gave one another. It was beautiful. I would, as much as I love West Virginia and the people who live there, there have been many times in my life where I've just thought, gosh, am I the only person here who wants something better? Am I the only person here who wants to do something different? And it's so easy to feel alone there where you're spread out and people don't talk about things because it's too controversial to talk about or whatever it is. But there were people who far, far outreached any type of creativity or intelligence that I than I could ever even fathom. And the beauty of the support that people had for one another and the uplifting and just
community
that was there. It was fun. It wasn't fun to be fighting for this because we none of us wanted to fight for it. We just wanted the respect. Why do we have to fight for 9 days to get basic life so that we could live,
right?
You know, when you have master's degrees. So, but it was fun knowing that we were all there enjoying just the community together and being a support system. Yeah.
Questions?
Show me some neckerchief.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think the miners who fought at the Battle of Blair Mountain would be quite proud of West Virginia teachers, too.
Thank
That's
you.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
That means a lot.
The second, the question I have is, are people who've been involved aware of just how far this has spread? You know, Kentucky teaches just
Oklahoma
state capital.
Yeah.
Well, even Kentucky.
Yeah. Oklahoma
yeah.
teachers
yeah.
talking about a statewide strike.
Yeah.
This is moving very fast. Good ideas.
Far red states.
Yeah, and yes, we are aware now that those. Because that's what people are talking about now. Yes, they are arguing, and yes, people are talking about, okay, well, what's our next step? And gosh, today they passed a bill, HB 4006, that takes away so many, not necessarily public school things, but things that public school kids benefit from, Energy Express, scholarship programs. They just cut it all, and it's detrimental to West Virginia. So, yes, we're talking about things like that, but also people are sharing so much about Oklahoma and Kentucky and sending money there and sending pictures there and support, because the pictures that we got, I don't think it really hit home until people from Washington were paying for our meals. Mm. People from San Francisco sent 500 pizzas to us. And we got pictures from New Zealand and Australia and London and just all over the world of people showing solidarity with signs saying, go West Virginia teachers, we support you. And I think that we knew how wide it spread, but I still don't think that a lot of people understand or can truly even fathom what it is. I think that we can recognize it, but I don't know if we can fathom or understand truly the inspiration that it has done, because we were just there doing what we wanted to do. It wasn't like we were organizing this for years. It wasn't like we have, you know, movements like you all have had here where you've been fighting for many years kind of over the same issues and you have bargaining rights and you've gone out on strike several times for different things. We don't have that. So we were just there in it, and we weren't trying to, we didn't know that anybody would pay attention. And so I think we know that it has gone so widespread, but we're still shocked. It's still just like, what? Awesome. Yeah, you go. We'll be there to support you. So
can I get something from this side? Debbie?
Yeah, I am totally inspired hearing the story of how you guys built your strike, how you built person-to-person conversation in, you know, little villages and hollows all around the state. I think it's super awesome. I'm wondering, did you back a while ago follow like how everybody was in the Capitol in Madison at the fight back that they had in Madison at all?
Maybe.
That has some of that same flavor of people coming together. And yet it ended up sort of in defeat and trying to get a candidate elected who didn't win and they didn't get the things that they wanted and the depression came down. How can we help you to avoid that kind of outcome?
Wisconsin, so they were the ones who... Right, that they were kind of squelched a little bit. They were fighting similar to us, and then it was kind of squelched, and people were still wanting to fight. Right, I'm trying to make, yeah. Because
it's like a general strike.
Yeah.
Democratic Party squelched it.
Right. So I think that what we did that, and hopefully what we will continue to do, was lean on each other and try and stay ahead of the pack, try and stay ahead of everything, and plan it out on our own with our own ideas of what we wanted out of it. And I'm kind of, we never really had a strict proposal, or we did fight or disagree or fight, kind of discuss back and forth. But I think that staying strong and unified and not being afraid, and the fear really, 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 really holds back. And when someone in power says, it will be okay, you want to believe them, especially if there's someone who has been an ally to you or someone who you trust. And I think that we could all, as a country and as standing in solidarity, can continue sharing with one another the battles that we are going through. And so that way, if it does come up like that again, where a party or a leaders of some type of group are saying, it will be okay, let's just calm down, we have that discussion, and it's kind of like the day that I felt, well, maybe we should just settle. People were saying, it's okay, let me take control. Let me be in control for a couple of hours while you just take a step away from it and just support one another all around the country, and or around the state, or you know, depending on how big the movement is, saying, kind of understanding the things that are going on and being able to step in for one another, I think is a really good thing to have, if that answers that question. Thank you, Debbie.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. So if you know, or if you don't know precisely, you can guesstimate, since West Virginia's right to work, how many of the teachers or members, actual members of the unions, because the incredible solidarity of teachers on the picket line is hugely important, but not everybody who's a member of the union who's out on that picket line. So
right.
Just if you could talk about that a little bit. And then what is the organization, like, has the level of organization, and I mean, obviously there's connections via Facebook and all that, but is there a way for folks to continue to get together, to talk, to debate, and to wrestle with some of these questions about?
So the answer to the first question is, I don't know. I don't know. Like I said, the unions didn't really seem to count or pay attention to who was union or not union. I think they knew because it was the ground up, because it was everyone else, not just teachers and not just union members. So they just were trying to help us out of the kindness of their hearts or need to stay in business. I will say that in having discussions with people, I think that I would say about 90% of people, of teachers or service personnel, are in unions. Nobody talks about it. I mean, maybe in some counties. I think that it depends on county leaders. I have a friend in Marion County. She's a delegate for AFT, and she absolutely loves it. They talk about unions all the time. But in my county, it's just kind of a shadow in the background. You sign up once, and that's it. Because, and I know that some people go to the building rep occasionally for small issues or big issues, but that's kept kind of private, but at least it's not discussed openly. And it's my understanding that people pretty much sign up for unions for, in our state, or at least in my county or relative circle, is for legal protection. I was a member of AFT for a couple of years and then left AFT because I didn't feel like I needed the protection and I didn't have the money. I mean, I could use that $40 a month. And I didn't necessarily agree with what they were fighting for, the things that I saw them fighting for. But that was naivety and ignorance, as it was charter schools. I thought, yeah, I want to teach at a charter school. So why am I going to fight against charter schools? But that was because I had no idea what a charter school was. I just thought, oh, yeah, I want to work at a school that's all arts. And I'm unconventional. I've never wanted to work in a public school. I wanted to work, you know, in a special kind of school in the Midwest. And but then it was funny because I was talking to one of the lobbyists for Procter & Gamble at a bar one evening, and he was telling me why he supported charter schools, and I did a 180. A guy who is lobbying for charter schools convinced me that charter schools were bad by his argument for them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so because it wasn't the fact of charter schools, just, you know, because they weren't in it for the right reasons at all. And so I've wanted to join the union again ever since, but it just hasn't really worked its way out. And so anyway, people just don't really talk about the other things that they do. But now this has really inspired the day of Tuesday, the day of, you know, we are the union bosses chant and do your job chant to the union leaders. Hundreds of people said, I'm going to leave the union. I'm taking away my dues. They're not fighting for me. We're the ones doing this work.
So, but who's saying they're not doing it, I'm out here doing it, and I'm going to challenge them? So, like, in this age of, like, Trump, you have all of these women in pink hats, and they're running for office. What is the feeling internally about those who want to challenge its current state of leadership? Is there any sentiment there?
Yes, there is, and that's what we were trying. My friends and I were trying to say, do not leave your unions. There is another way, but we can't teach you that way right now. Just stay with your union, mm-hmm. and let's get through this, and then we can try and change the union. But one of the reasons why I left AFT was because I didn't know there was a way. I didn't know that there were other people out there like me who wanted the union to speak for me rather than speaking for, you know, them speaking for me. I wanted, yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, you wanted democracy and voice.
Yes, yeah. But I didn't know that that was an option. Like I said, naivety and ignorance, I didn't know that that was a thing. So now that people understand what unionizing is, now that people understand what solidarity is, and all of the other political avenues that it takes you down, I think that we'll be seeing that conversation happening a lot more, where people are going to challenge what the union looks like at a leadership, not firing the leaders, not kicking them mm-hmm. out, but saying we want a voice. This is our voice, and let's become more involved and have discussions. What was your second question?
Where is it going to live? The organization moving forward look like?
Okay.
Do you feel like you have more organization?
Yeah, I think that we will. I think that we, from talking to several different people, we are now where the Chicago Teachers Union was back, I don't know how many years ago, but several years ago. I'm sure you kind of know when I'm talking 12. About, yeah, right, 2012. Mm-hmm. So we are there now, and there are enough people who are studying what you all did and who are involved in different avenues of communication with people around the country who've been through things like this, that it will move more towards a democratic, more involved rank and file membership. So I'm looking forward to that in the next couple of years. Yeah.
One,
that's
two,
really
and three.
You know, that sort of move towards our right to power caucus model. I'm wondering if there's also political consequences for the legislators. And how does that the politics to the organizing? There's been a lot written about Virginia and the ways with which the state Democratic Party has been very much in the bed of the extractive industries that aren't being taxed and hasn't reflected the sort of restlessness of working class folks. West Virginia. How do you do that, bend that politics towards the amazing organizing?
That's a great question. I can't believe that I have forgotten about that in all these questions about the future. Our next step, one of our next steps, immediate steps, is voting in May and November. And the Democrats have promised a lot. They have spoken up. I mean, I love them. They did great things for us. The Republicans did not. We hate them. Not all of them, of course, but the delegates really did step up for us in the end, which was great. But the Democrats did kind of get in their heads and toot their own horns a lot. And they stood up in every single floor session, about five or six of them, and were like, teachers, you're the greatest, you're the ones leading this, and we need to support you. And they just went on and on and on. It was like, come on, let's get this bill rolling. And so they've done a lot for us, but in turn that means that they have a lot to live up to. And we have a lot of people, because as this discussion was happening in February and March, the pre-discussions were happening, the ballot sign-ups for this next term was happening. So there are a lot of teachers and public employees who are running for office now. So, yeah, it is. That's the best thing I think that's happened out of this is the physical change that's going to happen in the government. And burned me up a couple of times. There were, I don't know if it was the same Republican or if it was two Republicans in the Senate. I was sitting in a different part of the gallery where I couldn't see them. It was two different ones. One of them said it to me in person. The other one said it on the Senate floor. Well, I'm so proud of you all that you've come down and learned a lot about the legislative process. Congratulations. And it was just like, if I didn't hate you more already. So it was, it's that. And I think that we have learned a lot about how things work. And it's that people are sold and bought way before they get onto that Senate floor, way before they get onto that, onto the House of Representatives side. And I think that we knew that before, but just not to the extreme extent that it runs in their veins. So I think that we might see the teachers going in. It will be more genuine. It will be a more genuine argument, a more genuine fight than it has been in the past. And it won't be, you know, people like Jim Justice, who's our governor and who is the richest man in the state and doesn't want to raise taxes. Or like Donald Trump, who is draining the swamp with corporate leaders who are billionaires. It will be a drain of the swamp and middle class working people who know what's going on be put into office. And so I'm looking forward to that. And I think that, it will truly show us what our state is and how it's going to move forward and what taxes we can raise, what taxes we can't. And I think that the trust will be there a whole lot more going forward with the delegates and the senators who do come into office than it is right now. Does that answer your question?
Right here.
Yeah.
Right here.
No?
And I really think the other lesson that a lot of people are learning from watching West Virginia is that where the power lied was not in the Capitol amongst the politicians, but amongst the people of West Virginia who stood up and made the politicians do the right thing. whether they wanted to or not. Carmichael, I'm sure, was upset by the fact he had to change his mind on things, but he was forced to change his mind. I think that's a lesson that we have to take in.
Mm-hmm.
Regular people have the power to govern their state and take it over. And to your point about the unions, I think it's also important, like our union density in this country is so low right now. But I think if people saw unions as example of what happened in West Virginia, everyone would join a union.
Yeah.
In a sense,
our
union is our coworkers getting together and demanding what's right for us in our workplace, what's right for our kids, what's right for our patients, et cetera. So my question, though, is moving forward, I know some of the things that Carmichael threatened was that, in order to pay for this 5%, we're going to have
Medicaid.
Medicaid. So what do you see as far as how it's going to be responded to if they attempt to do that kind of stuff?
It's not going to be pretty. They've gotten a lot of backlash about that, and that was, it actually really concerned me when they passed the 5%, because not only did they pass the 5% for teachers, service personnel, and state troopers like they promised, but they're promising to raise the 3% that they were going to give to state employees to 5%, which is wonderful. That's what it should have been in the first place. But they were fighting so much about not having the money. And now all of a sudden we have the money for 5% for everybody. What's your game here? And I think that if they are going to take from Medicaid, I don't know. I don't know if they can. People have been asking, how do we kick them out of office right now? How do we do that? How do we get justice? Not so much anymore. But Carmichael, everybody hates his guts. Senator Blair, who is his right-hand man, people hate him. And some things that people have been talking about is picketing their businesses, try and get people to boycott them. And, yeah, so I forget what your question was.
Are you tired?
I think you asked right here. So we're going to let you get some rest right here.
First of all, maybe you all know this, but you've just been such an inspiration to everybody.
Thank you.
And I had a meeting last night with a bunch of really low-wage workers who have been fighting for 15 in Chicago for a long time. And they, too, said that this was just, we were just sharing that it was really inspirational.
Good.
The problem is, though, and this is where my question is, when those of us, most of us are not in a union, I'm not in a union, and we fought a union, but so in your union strike, how did you create linkages? It seems that you did with folks that are not in unions all throughout the state, and I mean, do you see this as part of a drive to unionize more? And of course, West Virginia has an amazing history, you know, which is really distinct in the country.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that might have been a help for you. But I'm just wondering, you know, in terms of outreach for all of us who are not in unions, you know, what do we do? Where are you thinking of going?
Is there a union that you can join?
No.
Okay. So, I think that one of the reasons why we told people not to leave the union, because we could, it was us. We were like you said, it was just us being like, all right, we're going to fight. But the union had certain resources in finding out percentages of how many people were going to leave in a strike, and having designated people who are going to be at the bargaining table. And I think that those were the two biggest things that the union leaders did. And because, so I guess I'm trying to say that having a small group of people who could do those types of things, just, it's hard because the unions could do it on the times when we were working. The leaders could do it on days that we didn't have to go to, that we did have to go to work. But once we were on strike, there could have been people to go to the negotiating table because we weren't in work in our job. So I don't want to claim to be an expert, but having one or two people who are leaders of the group or who would speak on behalf of the group at the negotiating table would be key, would be the biggest key if you had a small... How many people are a part of the...
Well, I'm just thinking for all of us who are non-unionized and for folks in West Virginia who are not in a union who might have supported your strike, are they looking at expanding unions? And, I mean, beyond the teachers' union.
There are... I think... I feel like I'm the right person to talk about this. I think that you just have to have a group of people who are on the same page and who want the same thing. And you don't have to think about it as this organization that is in charge. It's you're in charge. And get a secret Facebook group where people talk about stuff and have a couple of people synthesize that information, put the information out there. Okay, this is what I'm hearing. Put a couple Facebook polls up. Because we had several of those where there were five different ideas that people had, and then we voted to see which one, and it, you know, gave you a percentage and how many people voted for each, and then that helped us figure out, okay, these are actual issues that we want to focus on. So that helped the 20,000 people figure out our main points that we were all agreeing on. And it helped give us a visual of where the other people in the group stood. So that way, if an issue did arise, mm-hmm. you know, the struggles that you had or people coming from other places, you could speak for your brothers and sisters. Right. You could say, well, yeah, there are people who are worried about the raise, and they're worried about the raise for this, but that's not our main fight. Our main fight as a group is this, but you need to also be aware of blah, 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 blah. Right. So that's my biggest suggestion to you is just – believe in each other and know that you are not alone, and try and just bring everybody together to have a discussion about what you want to do and go from there. Does that help?
So Olivia, you're tired.
Yeah.
And you should be. And we're going to have her back here in the morning. So what should we take away from this interaction with you tonight in terms of how we should synthesize moving forward? I'm going to cheat and say one of the things that keeps provoking me as I listen to your story is that I'm listening to the same characters who are robbing us of revenue in West Virginia that are robbing you of revenue. That this is simply not about strike. It is, because that catalyzes us. That gets our attention. But how are we doing the and to the portion of revenue, the billionaires who are not paying their fair share and expecting us to work for free, expecting us to go without resources? So I'm listening to that, and I'm excited that we have solidarity in that and what the possibilities are for this mass movement against that in particular, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what is it that we take from you to go back and work on? What is it that you hope we do in the spirit of the organizing that you all did?
What we did that I think really kept us going and helped keep us on track from listening to the rhetoric was we kept the idealistic, maybe not even idealistic, the reality, the beautiful reality that we could have in our mind. Mm-hmm. This reality that we are doing this for our students. We are doing this for our happiness, and we deserve happiness. I don't know if you all feel that, but we definitely feel in West Virginia, yeah, that we don't deserve to be happy. And what kind of life is that to live, where you're questioning if you deserve basic rights? Money At the end of the day, if they extract all of our resources and give us lots of money now, we will not be able to live or survive on this planet once all of our resources are gone. Exactly. But we will be able to survive if the money's not there and the resources are. So people are driven by money and jobs that provide money. So that's the main thing that you hear. Well, it's going to give us jobs. It's going to give us jobs. And it's like, oh, well, I need a job because I need to be able to pay for these things. But I think that once you look at what life truly is, food and protection from the rain and, you know, and having health and the elements, that and love and people, that's what life is about. And we're just kind of tricked into thinking that it's more and it's all about money, because that's kind of how we get those other things. But at the end of the day, 100 years from now, 200 years from now, or maybe not even that long, if we don't have and it's gotten so political, so I feel like I'm sounding like some wild environmentalist, which I'm not. But if the world, if the environment isn't there, then we will die.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it is.
Yeah. So I think that if we are able to relate that information and relay that information to people who are money driven or who are tricked into being money driven, that maybe we'll actually be able to win this fight.